Good evening. Welcome to tonight's program of the Commonwealth Club of California with Naina Kaputi, who's going to speak on India's girls, the endangered gender. My name is Cynthia Miyashta. I am a volunteer chair of the club's Asia Pacific Affairs Forum. It's nice to see you here. Welcome to any new members, and we will hope to see you here often. Naina Kaputi grew up in India. She came to the United States 11 years ago to study film in New York. She has produced several short films and is the producer and director of Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls, a feature-length documentary film that highlights how age-old beliefs, intolerance, and a preference for sons, combined with growing materialism and technology, is leading to increased incidents of discrimination, violence, and the tragic murder of millions of girls and women in India. She has traveled across India to shoot this film, which is now in its post-production. The film trailer has already screened in cities in India, the U.S., and Canada. She founded the Global Walk for India's Missing Girls in 2010, an international awareness campaign on gendercide in India that has taken place in over 25 cities, and the campaign has come to San Francisco as well, and 5 countries. Would you please join me in welcoming Naina Kaputi?
Thank you, Cynthia, for the introduction, and I want to thank everyone for coming today. I wasn't sure what the turnout would be like for a topic like this on a warm evening in San Francisco. So just to give you a little background, as Cynthia said, I got involved in this whole topic because of the documentary film that I'm doing, Petals in the Dust, The Endangered Indian Girls. And I started this film about 5 years ago. I traveled to India because I wanted to adopt a little girl, and one of the orphanages that we visited, the supervisor told us that before the orphanage was built, they used to drown baby girls in that lake. And even though I grew up in India, you know, I think I was really lucky to be born into a family that valued girls, and my dad actually wanted to have 4 daughters. So I grew up feeling very privileged to be a girl. And in fact, my brother always used to say, you know, Daddy prefers you to me. So, and maybe I wasn't, you know, there wasn't much in the media while I was growing up about the violence against girls or even, you know, what we call female infanticide or feticide. And so when the supervisor of the orphanage mentioned this to me, it came as a big shock that, you know, I grew up and wasn't even aware of this. And my husband's a filmmaker. I've dabbled a little bit in film, and I said, we have to do a documentary film because this is something that not just India needs to be made aware of, but the international community. And it's been a long journey, and, you know, when I decided to do the documentary, I didn't realize it would take so long and, you know, all these different hurdles, and maybe I'd have thought otherwise then, but now that I've met so many wonderful people and, you know, shot so much of the film, I have no regrets, and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, to have the film ready by the late summer and released. So what I'm going to show you, I'm first going to start with showing you some clips from what we call the rough cut. And we've just strung together a few sequences. So it may not flow like the final film will be. So don't judge the final film based on this. And as I said, it's a rough cut. So even the little clips that you see may not be as polished as we'd like it to be. But I thought I'd start with that and then go into a little PowerPoint presentation. Hopefully, you know, get you guys thinking more about the film and what's happening with the girls. So let's hope this works now.
Growing up, it wasn't an issue I was aware of. You know, within my family, yeah, all the girls were treated just like the rest of the guys.
We're from a town called Allahabad, and it's a small town. It's really backward in that sense, where girls are really not treated so well. So I kind of had an awareness growing up, but I definitely learned more about it when I went into high school.
I think the big shock came a few years back when I was here, and I was following about things happening in India and learning about how far people have gone for the preference was not just a preference anymore of having a boy. It was more of a mandate.
I remember my younger sister. My mom was used to dress her as a boy. So the issue could be avoided. She doesn't have to answer that many people why she has four girls.
When I was born, my dad's friend's wife too gave birth to a son when my mom gave birth to me. And my dad just entered the room, just got to know that I was a girl, and just looked into my mom's face and called her a bloody idiot and just walked out.
My mother was from India and she'd already had two daughters, and when she found out it was a girl, she found out immediately that she needed to have an abortion because of the fact that I was a female, and she knew that her family would be outcast due to that situation.
Back in the early morning, a girl actually abandoned a girl child in the somewhere near our bush, near our ashram, and it came to some of the notice of the people who are going away, going in the road, and somebody shouted, and our volunteers went there and saw that there was an abandoned baby in the bush. Fortunately, our home is very near to the bush where the baby was abandoned. Within 1 hour, we are able to rescue the child. Otherwise, it would have been, the fate would have been a very different thing.
I remember a story my father told me that when he was younger, he remembers back in the village in Punjab where they used to make the rupees outside. And after they made the rupee, they put it under a basket. And he remembers going to get a rupee and there was a baby under the basket. And he was just told, never mind, we'll deal with that later. And it clearly was a girl child who had died.
In terms of female infanticide, we've all grown up knowing about these horrible practices. We've also grown up, reading our history books where sati was practiced, where the woman jumped into the pyre along with her dead husband. And of course, we realized that, growing up as young girls, we know that, this was a society that preferred young, boys and men.
लड़की पैदा होगा तो मैंने मदद बोला ऐसा बच्चे ये लड़की कूदो कूद किधर तभी ले को चाको छोड़ दे तो ऐसा बोला हम वो इको नहीं ऐसा करता नहीं फिर भी मेरे फ्रेंड के पास वो चावल का ये देखो वो मुंह में डाल को वो उसको डाल दिया मेरे को मालूम नहीं है फिर मेरे हस्बैंड को पूछा किधर बच्चे ऐसा बोला वो बोला मर गया.
3-month-old baby Afreen, allegedly battered and abused by her father for being born a girl, died at a hospital today after suffering a massive cardiac arrest.
Father accused of killing his 1.5-year-old daughter has been arrested.
The police found another baby girl abandoned. A 4-day-old girl was found abandoned in a garbage dumper in Delhi's suburb of Gurgaon.
We have a civilization of several thousand years where women have been discriminated. But unfortunately, in the last 40 years, the most extreme form of discrimination Indian women have seen, that is, girls are not allowed to be born.
The day my husband and in-laws came to know that I'm carrying twins, they wanted to know the sex of the child. I mean, the first thing I was told was that they won't accept two daughters in their house. So we have to get a sex determination test done, and if they are girls, I have to get an abortion. And this was a big shock for me, because
my in-laws, my husband, they all belong to a very educated family.
The technology is being abused to detect gender of the baby and then selective fetal abortions.
In the last decade, India has eliminated more girls than the number of Jews exterminated in the Holocaust.
The Indian girls are as endangered as the tiger. I think they're as vulnerable as the tiger also.
How unsafe the national capital is for women. A young woman was allegedly gang raped in a moving bus in Delhi last night and then thrown off of it. The 23-year-old victim is now in hospital.
In 2002, I was walking in 1 kilometer from my house. That place was very lonely. No, it was like a little bit of forest type. If I shout also, nobody can hear. That time two boys came and they raped me more than 2 hours. They were keeping one knife in front of their hand and one boy was watching, oh, anybody is coming like that. Another boy is raped me. I begged like anything 1-2 hours, but they didn't leave me. Then I told, I'm like your own mother. Why you're doing like this? It's not good. Till now, night time, suddenly if I get also, I won't get sleep also. So many times I tried to suicide myself. I don't want to live on this earth.
Girl's life, I don't want. I love my son because he's a boy. Wherever he goes, no problem for me.
The society doesn't support you, the authorities don't support you, your in-laws don't support you, if your parents also don't support you, then the woman has no way to go.
You can be as evolved as you want in your mind, but if there's that one compartment that says women don't deserve to be treated like human beings to begin with, and it doesn't matter whether urban, rural, it's just that the degrees of harassment and degrees of degradation vary.
I think many of us who've broken away from that stereotypical mold of what a woman should be or what a girl child should do, I think we have sort of taken it upon ourselves to lead a different path and to show to other women that it can be done.
It's a duty of every Indian who has been blessed with more to give more.
Female infanticide is not a simple issue to eradicate it just in one go. Any revolution would have to come in steps. So we just aim to eradicate in the next generation so that our children do not face this discrimination.
It's time that we took the problems of women seriously. We hold up half the sky and we get maybe 10% of the share of the world.
Voice of India's Missing Girls, and we support the documentary film Petals in the Dust.
Yes!
So, you know, when I first decided to shoot the film, I was focusing more on what we call the missing girls, the girls that have been eliminated from India's population. And so initially, it was called Petals in the Dust, India's Missing Girls. But as I traveled around India and I started meeting women and meeting activists and meeting even men, I realized even the girls that have not been eliminated either before they were born or shortly after they're born are still endangered. Unfortunately, we had the recent case of the rape in Delhi. And, I mean, that's just one example of, you know, how at every stage girls are not safe. And it isn't just in India. It obviously happens all across the world. And but I decided, since I'm Indian and I feel very strongly about what's happening to our girls in India, I felt it was almost like my duty in a way, because for all these years I kind of just had fun in India and never really paid much attention to what was going on around me. And I felt a documentary film is very powerful. I mean, it's visual, it's easy to get people to watch, and it also can be used as an educational tool to, you know, school, high school and college students in India and also globally, because through this film, I'm also hoping to get people to think about how violence affects their community and affects women in their community, and, you know, what can be done to change it. Because, I mean, almost every day in the paper and the news, there's some case of violence against women somewhere in the world. So I decided then to change the name of the film from Petals in the Dust, India's Missing Girls, to The Endangered Indian Girls. And that's so the film has also kind of evolved along with, you know, the interviews. And so actually this is a lake in Bangalore. I mentioned I had visited the orphanage. I mean, here it looks like really shallow because I went when it was kind of the dry season, but this is what where the little baby girls were being drowned. It's in the outskirts of Bangalore, which is actually the Silicon Valley of India. And ever since this orphanage has come up, there are lots of baby girls that are left. And actually, orphanages in India are one of the few places where girls outnumber boys, because the girls are abandoned because the parents don't want to bring them up. So usually for every four girls, there's one boy. And the same with the orphanage at this place. So, you know, people have asked me, like, you know, this is a country that worships goddesses, has had a woman prime minister who was very dynamic and very powerful, and currently has our first female president. So why are girls endangered? You know, there are people who pray. There's a goddess of wealth called Lakshmi, and there's another goddess of education and knowledge called Saraswati. And, you know, people pray to those goddesses, and yet when a Lakshmi comes to their home, they don't want that Lakshmi. So why in a country where not just the prime minister and the president, there are a lot of women that are in positions of power, and so why is it that people don't want daughters in their own homes, yet they know that women can achieve a lot? That's a question that I kept asking too, because when I initially started shooting, I myself did not know how bad it was and what really the reason were for people discriminating against their daughters. So this is the average sex ratio worldwide at birth is 105 boys to 100 girls. However, in India, the sex ratio at birth is 112 boys to 100 girls. And if in a population of over 1 billion, that is huge. You know, 112 boys to 100 girls already is leading to a deficit. And why is it at birth that there is that, you know, that India deviates so much from the average sex ratio worldwide? So one of the main reasons is what is called sex selective abortions. And why is this happening? I may need the AV guy. Oh, no, it's fine. I think it had a little stuck. Okay, that's good. Okay, so 10 million girls have been selectively aborted in the last two decades. Now, in the 1990s, India's economy opened, and with that, the ultrasound machines. GE came into India, and they actually partnered with an Indian company called Wipro, and they started manufacturing the ultrasounds. Maybe they realized that there was a demand for ultrasounds because people could find out the sex of their child. I don't know what that immediate. I don't know if they really understood it when they first came in, but what was noticed was that suddenly the number of baby girls being aborted was increased. And then the Indian government in 1994 enforced a law where you could get an ultrasound done, but the doctors could not disclose the gender of the baby. But they found that despite the law being enforced, that there was no reduction in the number of baby girls being aborted. And so, you know, they have done some, they've sent in pregnant women as decoys with hidden cameras, and they find that doctors are disclosing the gender of the baby. A few doctors have been fined and imprisoned, but in most cases they get away scot-free. And the doctors now have realized that there are these decoys being sent in, so they do not say you're going to have a boy or girl. They'll on the report, they'll put a plus sign for a boy, and if it's a girl, they'll put a negative sign. So again, you know, they're linking girls with negativity, and you know, or they'll say, you know, paint the room blue or paint the room pink. Or if they have like a god and goddess picture at the back, they'll point to whichever, you know, whatever gender the child is. So, and it has become a multi-million-dollar industry. In fact, the ultrasound industry in India is, in 2010, it was $120 billion. And India is the fastest growing country for ultrasound machines. There's such a demand. So not only are they available in the big cities, they also now, you have the portable ultrasounds, so you have people getting into little mobile vans and going into villages where there's not even drinking water. Women have to walk miles for water, and then yet you have this mobile van coming to your doorstep, and you can find it if you're having a boy or girl. The interesting thing is that, you know, it's happening more among the women in higher income and better educated families and the poorer. You know, whenever people hear about the gender selection or the skewed ratio, they say, oh, it's only the poor that are getting rid of their daughters. And it's actually not. Studies have shown that in some of the richer states in India, like, you know, South, and in Delhi, South Delhi, which has some of the most educated and wealthy people, the ratio of boys to girls is actually the most skewed. So it looks like with more wealth and education, people seem to, you know, not want daughters. They consider daughters a burden. So this, you saw a little bit of Dr. Mithu Khurana in the film, and she's a doctor. In-laws are teachers and professors. Her husband is a doctor, and she has another sister, and her father's a doctor too. And she grew up in a family that really valued girls. Her father and mother, you know, treated both their daughters really well, sent them to medical school, and she said she never dreamt that she would land up in a marriage where she would be, you know, abused by her husband and in-laws. And in fact, her husband and father and husband are in the same profession. They're both, I think, orthopedic. They have some kind of orthopedic practice. And her husband told the father that as dowry, you have to give me some of your patients. And for every patient you give me, I will sleep with your daughter for that night, otherwise I'm not going to sleep with her. I mean, he had, and this is an educated man. And then, of course, when she got pregnant with twins, they were after her to find out the gender of the baby, because they said, we don't want any girls. And she refused to do an ultrasound to detect the gender, but then what they did was, she's allergic to eggs, so they gave her, one day they gave her a cake and said it was eggless and it actually had eggs, and she got really sick and had to be taken to the emergency room. And while she was semi-conscious, they did an ultrasound and found that both the babies were girls. And after that, the abuse and harassment started. And they said, at least, you know, we don't want daughters in this house and they're too much of a burden. And when she refused, she was pushed down the stairs. And then after she had her daughters, her mother, and this is all she's, I don't know this, but this is all that she told me, and I believe her because it's not, you know, this is all out in the public. After she had her girls, her mother-in-law threw one of her daughters down the stairs. So this is shocking, and she's actually fighting. She's been fighting this case for the last 5 years because they did an illegal ultrasound sex determination test on her. I said it was illegal, and the hospital that it was done in is one of the most, it's in a really rich, you know, wealthy part of Delhi. The owner of the hospital is very well connected, and her in-laws and husband too are very well connected. So she's been fighting this case for 5 years, and she's just been running from pillar to post. I mean, it's an easy case. They did an illegal ultrasound. They should be fined. They shouldn't be in prison. And she even told me, one of the judges told her, why don't you go back to your husband? All he wants is a son. Why don't you give him that son? You know, why are you destroying your marriage? And She said she refuses to divorce him because the day she divorces him, he's going to marry another woman, take another dowry, and then harass that woman to have a son. So that's the reason why she has not given him a divorce. So it's a sad case, but she's one of the few women that's actually, this is a story of many women, but she's one of the few women that has come out and, you know, spoken publicly about it. And she said, if I give up, if I stop this fight, no other woman is going to come forward. So I'm going to keep fighting till I get justice. In fact, the court actually just gave her husband's partial custody of the daughters. The daughters that he never wanted, he now wants to show that he really wanted his daughters. And so he gets to see the daughters every other weekend. And it's unfortunate and it's shocking and it's sad. So as you saw in the film, you know, 50 million girls have been eliminated in the last century, and this is more than the number of people killed in World War II and the number of Jews killed in the Holocaust. And it's been referred to as gendercide or femicide because it's the deliberate mass killing of a particular gender, in this case, female gender. And this is the worst genocide in India's history. During the partition, there were a lot of people that lost their lives, but this is the number of girls that have died because of this son preference is much more. So I spoke about sex selective abortions, but there are other ways that people do away with their daughters, and this is female infanticide. So when the parents who are lower income and cannot afford to abort their daughter or have an ultrasound to find out the gender of their child, once the child is born and it's a daughter and they don't want the child, these are some of the ways they get rid of the child. And as you saw in the preview, this woman talking about how her husband fed her daughter rice husks and it choked her. So the most common methods were suffocating, feeding poison, rice husks, drowning, burying alive. But the police now have started paying attention to what is happening, and the parents could get arrested. So now they're using modern techniques. So when the baby is brought home from the hospital, they wrap the baby in a wet blanket, or they dip her in a bucket of cold water, and then to induce a pneumonia. And then they take her to the doctor and ask the doctor for medicine. And then they bring the baby back with the medication, and they throw the medication away. And then when the baby dies, they tell, you know, if the police come to their home, they said, you know, she had pneumonia, and even with the medication, she didn't get better. So it's hard for the police to really know whether this is a case of infanticide or the baby. And the same thing with the diarrhea. They give the baby a drop of alcohol, and it induces diarrhea, and they throw the medication away again. This is a woman I met. She's now 53 years old, and she was buried alive 53 years ago when she was 16 days old by her father because he didn't want a daughter. And she was rescued by her grandfather. And when the grandfather brought her back to the village, the whole village ostracized them because they said, this is bad luck. You're bringing an unwanted girl, someone that the father didn't want back to the village. So they had to move from village to village. And her father, you know, later when she was a teen, again, he tried to kill her twice. Once he contracted a man to go and try and kill her. And then a second time he gave her something that was laced with poison. But anyway, her story has a happy ending. She met a man who really loves her. She got married. She's entered politics. And now she, in the very town that she was buried in, she now is an advocate for women's rights and for... She encourages women to have daughters, to educate their daughters. So she is hoping to reverse the cycle of violence against girls in the place where she lives. So another way that girls, unfortunately, are eliminated is postnatal discrimination and neglect. And the mortality rate for girls from ages 1 to 5 is 75% higher than boys in the same age group. So for every 100 girls that die, 56 boys will die. And the reason, again, it's because of neglect. You know, first of all, girls are often breastfed for shorter periods of time than the boys, so they're not getting that nutrition. So they're already very weak, and sometimes they're starved. So the parents will not kill them, but they will deliberately starve them or not give them enough nutritious food. And often the girl, even if she's sick, she's not given medication or taken to the hospital when she is ill. So the ratio of boys to girls in India between the ages of 1 to 5 is more skewed than the worldwide ratio. And then, of course, dowry. I believe everyone is familiar with dowry, so I'm not going to go into it. But unfortunately, dowry seems to be getting worse. There was a law banning dowry in 1961, but the law has not been enforced. I have met with dowry victims in India and also spoken to activists that work with dowry victims, and they were saying the police and the authorities themselves very often are, you know, demanding dowry for their son's wedding. So why will they arrest other people who are demanding dowry? And what happens is in some cases when the woman and her family are no longer able to provide money for the husband, the woman is often killed. And the most common method is burning. And then they say that there's a stove burst because many of them cook on kerosene stoves, or we also still have gas cylinders. So they'll say the cylinder burst and make it look like an accident. And in some cases, of course, they force the woman to consume poison or even to hang herself and make it look like it was a suicide. And every 90 minutes, a bride is burned in India, and 107,000 brides are killed every year in dowry-related violence. There's also the high maternal mortality rate. There are many women who are forced to have multiple abortions to get rid of their daughter. So they'll have many abortions till they finally have a son. And some of these women die from complications or because their bodies have become so weak. And sometimes the women are also killed for giving birth to a girl. And I haven't met women, but activists have told me about women who have committed suicide after they've given birth to a girl because they're so depressed. You know, they're made to feel that if they have a daughter, they're not going to be treated well in the house. So out of desperation, some of them have killed themselves. So why are they being eliminated? So this why water a plant that will bloom in someone else's garden is an old saying, but that kind of sums up some of the parents' attitude to daughters, that they don't want to invest in a daughter because they feel they won't get those returns because she'll get married and her husband's family will benefit from their daughter. So the most common reasons are two-child policy. Not too many people are aware of the two-child policy in India because it wasn't really enforced. But in the 1970s, the Indian government decided to promote two children, hoping to curb the population growth. And I remember seeing signs on the back of trucks or at railway stations, "Hum do, hamara do." You know, it'll be a family of a father, mother, a boy and girl, and they all look very happy and smiling. It's "Hum, we two and R two." And I even remember later it became "we two and R one." But when it was "we two and R two," it was always one boy and one girl. So that was the ideal happy family. So what happened is when parents, their first child is a girl, then they will do everything in their power to make sure the second child is a boy. So that's when, the abortions or the infanticide start so they can have a son. And then, of course, dowry. Parents, run into debt for years and sometimes can never repay the debt because they have to give, a huge dowry for their daughter's weddings. Very often, the weddings are paid for by the girl's family, and, sometimes Indian weddings can run into a whole week and you're buying, you're feeding hundreds of people, you're buying jewelry and clothing and for the bridegroom's family. So, again, people find it very expensive to bring up daughters. And then reincarnations. I spoke to a Hindu priest about this, and he was telling me how some people believe that if the sun does not light the funeral pyre when their parents die, their soul will not go into the next life. And he said, actually, it's not true. It can be any male member, but people have started, any male member of the family, it can be a brother, son-in-law, it can be a nephew, but people have become, again, so obsessed with the sun that they only want to have a son light their funeral pyre. And then India does not have a national social security system. So very often the parents live with their sons when they get old, and the sons look after their parents because the daughters move to the in-law's house. So they want to have a son to make sure there's someone that will look after them in the old age. And then a status symbol. Some women and men have shared how those who had only daughters, how people make them feel kind of inferior, like that they only have girls. And some men say they don't feel like they're a complete man because they've not been able to produce a son. So it has become, for some people, a status symbol to say, I have a son. And so what are some of the consequences? The 2011 census revealed that India's gender ratio has gotten, is the worst since the independence in 1947. And if we continue at the rate at which we are going of eliminating girls, in 20 years' time, there'll be 20% more men than women in India. Already in some parts of northern India, there are many men of marriageable age, and they're not able to find wives or brides. And you would think that fewer women would make women more valuable, but it's actually the reverse. It's actually endangering the lives of girls and women in India and its neighboring countries. So these girls that have been, as I said, you know, even though you survive being aborted or killed in infancy, you may still be at risk. And already there's been an increase in, you know, trafficking of girls and women, not just in India, but across the border from Nepal and Bangladesh. The latest kind of trafficking is bride buying, where women in parts of India which are poorer or where there are excess women, like Kerala, which has more women than men, are being, I wouldn't say sold into marriage, but you have a middleman who approaches the parents and says, you know, I have a nice bridegroom for your daughter, but he lives in North India, and I'll actually give you some money to have your daughter married to him. So these daughters get married to these men because the fathers don't have any money to pay dowry, and then they come to another part of India, and each part of India can be very different. They don't speak the language, the customs are different, and it's almost like being in a foreign country, and very often they are shared by more than one man in the family, or once they produce a son, then they're sold to somebody else. Because once you buy somebody, you become like a commodity. They kind of own the woman, and because she can't speak the language, she's not able to inform the authorities. And then more and more, because there are fewer women of marriageable age, again, younger girls are being married to older men. The legal age for marriage in India is 18, but girls as young as 11 and 12 are being married. And then there's polyandry because a woman is sometimes married. We'll do the questions in the end. Yeah. And then there's more. There's increase in sexual crimes and domestic violence. So the preference for sons is so deep-rooted that it's also, studies have shown that it's also happening in Indian communities in North America, UK, Norway, and Wales. And it's not just sex-selective abortions. It's also sperm sorting and it's called preconception genetic analysis. They look at the embryo and they will only implant male embryos. So the woman isn't even trying to conceive any baby of any gender. She wants to make sure she only has a boy, and so only male embryos are implanted. And, you know, there was a Dr. Sunita Puri, who actually is at UCSF, and she did a study in 2011 where she interviewed 65 women from India who now live in the U.S. And, you know, one woman told her how her husband was pressuring her to have a son. And many of these women were educated. Some of them even worked in the Silicon Valley. But just the pressure from their husbands and their in-laws made them want to have sons just to make the family happy, and, you know, they just could not take the pressure, and some of them were, you know, faced threats of divorce or abandonment. And as I said, a number of these women live in the Bay Area. And so how can we end this genocide? These are just based on feedback from activists and the victims on what they feel could be done. I'm not an expert, I'm a filmmaker, so these are their opinions, which I will bring out in the film in the end. And, you know, there are laws, but they're not enforced. And, you know, if they did enforce those laws and those doctors were taken to jail and fined, it would, because as one activist said, it's medical terrorism. You know, when you're medically targeting a specific gender and getting rid of it, it is like terrorism. And then dowry again, that, you know, these people who kill their daughters after they're born, if adoption was encouraged and there were more safe places for them to drop their babies off, maybe, you know, more babies would be saved. And then, you know, encouraging girls to go to school and not get married young could be by providing free education. We need to have more education around gender equality and gender violence in schools, because the next generation needs to realize how they need to treat women with respect. And you know, when I go back to India, I live in Bangalore. I'm always wary of my surroundings in the area where my parents live. And you know, I see some young boys, even though I'm so much older, will what we call eve teasing, whistle at you and harass you. And I think we really need to work with our youth and teach them how to respect women, and also, you know, what could happen if they choose to have only sons when they grow up. And I think women need to be empowered too, so they stand up to their, first of all, they refuse to marry if a dowry is demanded, and secondly, if someone is, you know, pressuring them to have only sons, they stand up for that. And if they're financially independent, maybe, you know, things will change. And also, if they start realizing that they are equal to men. Very often, women have grown up feeling that, you know, their brothers were better than them. So when they're married, they also think that, oh, my son is better than my daughter. And so they continue this whole cycle of discrimination. And that's, I realize we're running out of time. So, yeah, and if you want more information about when the film will be released or, you know, other events, we have a mailing. I have a sign-up sheet, so you could, you know, add your name and email address, and I'll keep you posted. So I'm open to questions.
Just a curious question: are there differences in this practice in the Sikh, Muslim, and Indian populations in India?
It's now happening across all religions. Initially, it was more among the North Indian community, which is Sikh and Hindu, some of the women that I interviewed, some of them are Christians, some Muslims. So it's more like a cultural thing. It's not a religious thing. So it's happening across all religions.
Well, the Indian community in the United States is a remarkably well-educated community,
right,
and actually becoming more so with the influx of technology people. And I've never heard of this practice in the United States, but I suppose it does exist,
right,
but I just have never read about it.
Right. It's, you know, there was a research study done in 2008 by two scientists at the Columbia University, and they found that when the first child was a daughter among the Indian community, the ratios were fine, 105 boys to 100 girls. But when it was a second-born child, the ratio went up. It was 117 boys to 100 girls. And then for a third-born child, so if they had two daughters, then they would, you know, maybe keep aborting till they have a son. So they found the study. Now, they haven't been able to draw any conclusions because it was a small subsect, but their research showed that it was happening. And then this Dr. Sunita Puri, she interviewed a lot of women. She interviewed 65 women who live in the U.S., and as I said, some of them lived in... So it is happening. The community is small, so it may not impact the U.S. like it impacts India, but unfortunately, for some people, that preference for sons... I mean, in the U.S., there is social security, so parents don't have to worry about the son looking after them. The dowry may not be happening like in India, but sometimes certain things are so, you know, ingrained in your mind or your culture that you bring it with you. And, you know, as I said, these are educated, wealthy women, so and men, but they're still choosing to have sons. So.
The numbers that you presented are really shocking and extreme, and I'm wondering just over the course of the last several decades, if you have sort of a point of reference for how things have changed in terms of percent, just
sure,
to see. And, you know, you've mentioned that a lot of these are due to different factors in today's world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you find that any of these trends have gone down? And if so, what would you attribute those
sure
to?
So the last census was done in 2011. The ratio of men to women, adult men to women, that gender ratio has improved, but the ratio of boys to girls, 1 to 5, has actually declined. I said it was the worst in India's history, so it's either because of more sex-selective abortions happening, or maybe now they're going in for the newer technology where they're having male embryos implanted. So it is getting, the ratios are getting worse And you know, that's and why demographers and activists are looking at that subsect, because those are the future, you know, adults of India, and that 1 to 5 is so that is declining, and it's and they, except for Kerala, that's the only state in India. It has 100% literacy. It's the only state in India where there are more women than men. But everywhere else, you know, and it's not just happening in the north. It's happening in the south. Earlier, it was mostly happening in Punjab, Haryana, Delhi. Now it has migrated to even Bangalore, which is, you know, as I said, the Silicon Valley of India is. What they're also finding is it's happening more in the cities now, and less in the rural areas. So people in the cities want to have only one child now because, you know, very often the man and woman are both working. They want to have, you know, the latest cars and houses, and they don't want to be. So they want to make sure that one child is a son. So that, but the good news is there are also more activists involved now. The media is paying a lot more attention. So, you know, you read about so many cases now. I mean, even the case, the rape in Delhi in the past, something like that wouldn't have got the kind of press that it got today. So in some ways, maybe all this negativity will bring out something positive and, you know, maybe make India a safer place for women.
The preference for the male child in Indian society, a lot of that is based on the assumption that the child, that the boy, will be there to look after the parents when they grow old.
Right.
How well is that holding up in current times when it's all nuclear families,
right.
Sons are going off, living
right.
on their own, not really taking care of parents?
Right. It's a good question because, you know, so some of the women I interviewed said they are looking after their parents. But parents don't realize that, right?
A lot more daughters now take care of
yeah.
their parents. They're
right.
more attached to the parents
right.
than sons are.
Right. But, you know, as I said, it's people, and even people who are killing their daughters, you know, they think they'll be, everyone else is keeping their daughters, so they'll have brides for their sons. So people are not looking at the bigger picture. They just think, I have to have a son. And the taking care of is one of the excuses, but it's much deeper. All those reasons, what I believe is finally that girls are considered to have less value than boys. And dowry, you know, taking care of, all kind of peripheral. The main thing is you don't think a daughter is as good as a son, and you feel ashamed to say you have a daughter. I mean, in some cases, not, again, it's not across the board. You know, I'm sure there are, like I said, my father was very proud to have a girl, and I'm sure there are many parents, and I have. In fact, our final film will end with stories of people who really value their daughters and are proud to have their daughters. But unfortunately, it's not the case. I mean, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. But yes, girls, I have found women are taking care of their parents in their old age. Yeah.
And you know, in an effort to end or reduce this gender side, probably one more thing that people can do is teach their daughters just self-defense.
Right.
So when they get attacked, no matter
right.
by whom, they can at least physically defend themselves.
Right. And I think that's going to happen with, you know, all the rape cases happening now.
Absolutely.
I think, yeah.
About
I think
time.
Because they can't, you know, you can't just keep your daughters hidden inside. You want to be out there. So I think it's going to be a different India if, you know, if the media keeps publishing and they have strong laws and the rapists are, you know, condemned and justice is seen, because as long as there's no justice, this is going to continue to happen.
If you read Western history and you see royal family history, you see a lot of pressure to make sure there's a male heir.
Right.
A lot of it is about power and about economic reasons.
Right.
A lot of the reasons seem to be fundamentally economic.
Right.
Take care of me when I'm older, or I have to pay, you know, 4 or 5 times annual salary to get you married off.
Right, right.
Or if I have 5 children, I'll get that much money in.
Right.
A lot of it is fundamentally baked into the Indian culture at this
right,
point. Right,
right.
But if you look at Kerala, it is not that way at all, and it is part of Indian culture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What is that difference? Why is it that one state can be so different and, you know, share so much with the rest of the culture?
It's a good question, and I unfortunately did not dig deep into why Kerala is, they have more women than men, and you know, they do say they have a, you know, 100% literacy, but as I said, educated people are choosing not to, so I can't say it's education. And maybe because some communities in Kerala have matriarchal societies, so it's not the whole of Kerala, so maybe, but maybe the other communities have picked up on that. And, you know, I've seen women in the matriarchals. They're very strong women, so it's could be a reason why.
I think that a Delhi situation was just a real wake-up call. It was for me, because I had no idea that was such an issue in India. It was really amazing. And I know that the trial's going on now for those men. Do you have any information about that? I think one of them committed suicide.
Right. And I wonder if he committed suicide or he was, you know, killed. I think, you know, in a case like, there's questions about that. I don't know what the latest is, but I think there's so much pressure on the Indian government to, you know, as I said, to see justice. So I think this trial is going to move, because very often the trials take forever. Like I said, with Dr. Mithu, who, you know, has taken her husband to court 5 years ago, she still hasn't. This case is still not completed. So, but I'm hoping with this case, and maybe, you know, unfortunately, even after that rape case, there were several more rapes that happened. So it didn't seem to scare the men away. So I'm against capital punishment, but who knows? Maybe something like that would stop people, because they know that they can get away with anything. It's been like that for so many years in India, where, you know, women would. There have been cases where women have gone to the police station to, you know, to tell them about the rapist, and in some cases the police have raped the woman after that, or told her it's your fault, it's the way you dressed or the way you behaved. You know, it's always blamed on the woman. So hopefully these things will change, and I'm hoping this trial. I haven't been following it. I'm so busy with, you know, editing the film right now that I'm not paying so much attention, but I hope. I really hope that
it hasn't been in the paper. I mean, the papers haven't been following it. At least I haven't seen it.
Not like initially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Hi. You mentioned more media attention. I'm wondering if there are efforts to use the Bollywood industry or, you know, social media to change the messaging. Like some countries use soap operas to show women in powerful positions and that sort of thing.
That's a good question. So there is a very big film star in India called Amir Khan, and he started last year. He had a talk show, and he covered different aspects of violence against women. And I know it did have some impact, as he did it like an Oprah show, where it, you know, so he'd have the woman and then he'd have the crowd. So there was a little bit of impact. But I also feel, you know, the Bollywood stars, so, you know, they spoke out against the rape when that happened. But in terms of films, films are still pretty derogatory towards women, you know. And I think a lot of people pick up on that, you know. They even, in some movies, they've even shown rape to be something that the woman desires, like in some Bollywood films. So all that needs to change, because I believe film can influence the way people think. In that case, maybe people who are not so educated, and they see all these people that they idolize on screen treating women so badly, and so they think they can do the same thing. So, and then when the rape happened, you know, there was a lot of criticism of Bollywood films and how they may be in some ways a factor in, you know, the increase in violence against women. So hopefully the directors will look at more positive means of, you know, promoting. And I know there have been some soaps dealing with infanticide. And there's also been a narrative film made called Matrabhumi, A Nation Without Women. It was about what India would look like if there was only one woman in that village, and how five brothers shared her. And it was a very thrilling film. It was interesting, though, when I was in India and was looking for a copy of that film, I could not get a DVD anywhere. You know, you think a film like that should be promoted, there should be screenings. I had to come back here and buy it off Amazon. So, I mean, if that is the attitude to a film like that, which is in a way telling the truth through its story, you know, so things have to change. And Bollywood is definitely a way that we could bring about this change, and hopefully my film.
There was a lot of controversy over Meera Nair's movies, and a lot of Indians felt that, even though she was speaking the truth, that she was being derogatory to the culture. Do you expect a lot of difficulty when you release in India?
I've already faced it.
When
I first decided to do this film, even some of my relatives said, why are you doing this film? Why do you want to expose India? And I said, it's reached a point where it's not just India's problem. That's why I bring in the Holocaust, because, you know, I've read autobiographies where they said, like, if the world paid attention, so many lives would have been saved. And the same with India, you know, it's because a country which has more men than women is dangerous, because you're going to have all these single men without brides. So it is right now, I feel, a global issue. And then, you know, I've had people say, why are you doing this about India? Do it about China, because China also has a problem. And then I say, I'm Indian, and, you know, I understand this culture. So I have faced, and I know I'll continue to face. But I have to say, a lot of Indians have been very supportive and, you know, said, great, we're so glad you're doing this, and, you know, this needs to be done. And you know, as I said, as Cynthia said, I also started the Global Walk for India's Missing Girls. And, you know, it's happened in 25 cities. You know, a lot of Indians have taken on you know, leadership roles of getting people involved. It's just an awareness march, creating, you know, educating people about the violence against women. So, yeah, thank you.
Fareed Zakaria on CNN recently said that the women's movement in India has the potential of becoming like the Arab Spring for the Muslim world. Do you feel there's that type of potential?
See, I left India before the you know, I know that a lot of it came about after the rape. I left. I wasn't in India after that, so I'm not sure. But I hope that is the truth. And I know the women in India were really upset and mad, and I've never seen so many women come out on the streets and demand justice. So I'm hoping that, and also a lot of men came out. I mean, you see so many of those protesters were men. So to me, that it's not just the women. We need the men as well, and I think that's powerful.
So I have a question just kind of thinking about within the universities in India, and I especially think about like a sociology curriculum and, you know, how can an issue like this not be something that's addressed? Is it really, you know, that much of a we're hiding this, we're not going to talk about it even in a university level sociology class? Or do you see some of those students who are in these curriculums in universities start to kind of understand the severity of this problem and really start to organize around it?
Good question. So they in the universities, if you're doing sociology, I'm sure, like I know gender studies is part of it, but it's only if you take, see, in India, if you take science, you only take science. You can't, you know, do a class in economics or sociology. So you're not, so what needs to happen is that no matter what subjects you take, you need to, this needs to be part of the curriculum, and I believe it needs to start at high school. So, and I don't even think in the U.S. there's gender studies for high school or college students.
Right, not really.
It's, unless you
there,
choose.
There are women's studies courses in college,
right.
And you would cover something like this in a sociology course.
Right.
But again, you know, it's a more well-rounded education usually, so even if you are a science major, you're going to cover off in some of the arts classes as
right.
The activists that are in India now, like, what is their background other than the ones that have actually, you know, been victims themselves? Like,
right.
What kind of backgrounds are they coming from? Is there a trend as far as, like, what kind of education they have, what profession they're in?
Sure. I think a lot, the activists I met, and, you know, well, it was only a limited amount, many of them had backgrounds either in public health or women's studies. Many of them weren't actually victims. They just, this, you know, the cause of women just was something that resonated with them. But, you know, what I'm noticing now, there are coaching camps for boys and men where they train them in sports, and also tied up with gender violence and gender equality. So that seems to be becoming popular. There's an organization called Futures Without Violence where they run cricket and soccer camps for boys in India and are bringing in gender equality into the training. So
yeah, that's a very, you know, positive.
Yeah, so I think sports could play a big role. So those people have obviously background in sports. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Naina.
You're welcome.
there are no further questions, I'd like to thank you, Naina, so much for sharing your experience. And really, this, I, like many of us here, I'm shocked at the numbers, and you've provided great service.
Thank you.
To enlightening us about what is going on. Best of luck with your film,
thank you.
We look forward to having it come out, you said, later in the summer.
Thank you. Thanks
great.
So much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you also.
Thank you.
And as I said again, there's a mailing list. Geetanjali will be standing there if you want to sign up to, you know, learn more about the film or want to get in touch with me. And I also have business cards and postcards. And if you're on Facebook, you can go to the Petals in the Dust page, because I post a lot of stuff there as well. So.